Normally, my wife Jenna is here, and she's the editorial review board. So after I speak and she's in the audience, you see me disappear. She's going over what I say. Well, John's here tonight to do that. Charlie Stead, who is an author, speaker, counselor, tells this story. When he and his wife first got married, they did a seminar called How to Raise Kids. Then Charlie says they had a few kids, and they changed the title of the seminar to A Few Things We've Learned About Parenting. And then when they had teenagers, they changed it to, Does anyone out there know how to raise kids? Some of you are laughing. It's been said, and my father used to say this, there are two ways to travel in this country, first class and with children. Some of you are recognizing that, right? Mm-hmm. Well, here's what parenting's about, real simple. We are to raise our children to be meritable so someone will take them off your hands, right? We want to train them to be employable so they're off your payroll. And we want to train them to be serviceable to God and country so we don't raise another generation of entitled narcissistic people. So we're going to remember that. They're made to be meritable, employable, and serviceable to God. Now here's a freebie. Do you know that sibling rivalry is really spring training for marriage? Isn't that not true? Here's why, because when a Christian marries another Christian, according to John 1:12, they're both children of God, which means they have the same father. So marriage is really siblings. And do siblings have rivalry in marriage? That's why it's very important. But most of us just throw up our hands and want to run away from it. You know, send them, like, here's the thing. You take your little video player on the trip, see? And you have two kids, they want to watch different movies. So you do one or two things. You buy a minivan with extra seats so they have their own seat or two viewers. Well, that doesn't, it solves the trip, but it doesn't really teach them how to negotiate. Because of that, there are three character traits which are vital for your children's success. Teach them to be independent. Because what's the opposite of independence? Dependence. And the culture is out there screaming dependencies. We teach them to be self-directed, and I'll explain what that means in Christian terms, because the opposite of being self-directed is letting everybody else direct them, and to assume responsibility. Those are three vital character traits. Well, how in the world do we go about doing that? Well, let's see the role of parenting. Here's the three roles. We are to be a guardian, not a helicopter parent, not to insulate them from every evil that could possibly happen, but just a guardian. We are to teach them to, we're a manager of them. Ephesians 6:4 says we are to raise our children in the nurture and admonition, not of how I was parented or my experience, but God, because if we look at our kids through the filter of my own childhood experience, how objective are we about our kids? We're not. And that's a hard thing to overcome. I've had parents, one parent said to me, you know, if I had been made to practice the piano like I should, I could have been in Carnegie Hall. That's why I'm making my kid practice the piano. Now, who's being reparented? Not that child. Not that child. When a kid does something wrong, most parents blame themselves. What did I do wrong? I heard a story recently that a mother's Jewish son converted to Christ. And when he had a funeral, he had a Christian funeral. And the mother, who was still alive, says, Oy vey, what did I do wrong? She took responsibility for that. It's called false guilt. And we're to be a source for our parents. That's Psalm 127, to see that. Well, what does that mean? You hear a little bit about grace from Brian, right? Occasionally? Occasionally? Probably. You know, talk about grace parenting. Here's why. All consequences are outside the relationship with the child. What do I mean by that? The parent, the kid does something wrong, parent just loses it. I can't believe you did that. You're such a disappointment to me. And we lose it. Who becomes the consequence? The parent. the parent becomes the consequence. What does that produce? Fear, passive-aggressive behavior, of which I could write a book on. I could write a book on it. Guilt, but never deals with the actual act. If the parent becomes the consequence doesn't change the behavior. Not that this has ever happened to me, but have you been pulled over by one of our finest officers? And you say, God bless you, officer. Thank you. My tax dollars are worth. Bless you for stopping. No. We get mad at him, don't we? Does he care? My last ticket was in 1999 in Leon County. I urge you, do not speed in Leon County on the way to FSU. Do not do that. Officer Baker pulled me over and wanted to know why I was in such a hurry. I says, well, my daughter and future son-in-law are in the quarterfinals of the flag football playoff at SFU, and the kickoff's at 9:30. I have to be there. He says, oh, I'm so sorry, Dan. Give me back that pink slip. No. He gave me that. Says, have a nice day. Hope she wins. And off he drove. That was the last ticket because I got tired of paying fines. He wasn't the consequence. That little slip of $119 in traffic school was. A believer will never be punished in eternity for sin because it is finished. Does your sin as a believer change your relationship with Jesus? If that were true, years ago Jesus said, look at the Father and says, did you see what Homus did again? That's it, I'm done. No, it doesn't. Our sin does not change our status and position with Jesus Christ. Our kids' sins should not change the status with us. Here's why. I have people tell me all the time, oh, I know God's forgiven me, Jesus forgiven me, but I can't forgive myself. I get a little dramatic, okay? Really? Now, here's Jesus' forgiveness, and yours is higher than his? I guess I need to ask you to forgive me. They look at me like I'm crazy. That's what you're saying. That's where it starts if we don't show grace to our children and have consequences outside the relationship because it does not change the relationship with Jesus. Now, I will admit, we'd like to wring their little necks at time, right? Just, you know, a little tune-up. But it does not change the relationship. And parents, when we get angry at what our kids do, which we will do, I would like to say I never got angry at my kids parenting them. You can see by the smile I'm lying through my teeth. If you attempt to discipline your child in anger, you will be very objective. And all they do is either fear you or get angry at you. They do not see the consequence of the choice. The consequences are always outside the relationship. Now, here's something funny. By the way, this comes from a great book, which I'd highly recommend at some point, to do the video curriculum of Boundaries with Kids, Cloud and Townsend. That's where this comes. Here is the balance formula for parenting. The love you give a child equals the responsibility you give a child equals the freedom you give the child equals the consequences. Now, let's watch this. Let's say we're really long. We love those little kids. Just love, 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 love. And we give them all kinds of freedom. Date them, never marry them. They're great dates because they have their love, they feel special, all this freedom. They're great to be with, but don't marry them. Let's try this one. You give them a lot of responsibility and a lot of consequences. Now you're raising the obsessive compulsive personality, the perfectionist. Okay. How about a lot of love and a lot of consequences? Oh, you treat people that have abandonment issues? Intimacy issues, because they're afraid to take a risk. They don't know which it is. You get mixed messages. And I could go on with these combinations. There are many of them. When you give them a lot of love and consequences, that has a love-hate. It raises people who are very performance-oriented because I have to perform to avoid the consequence. And when you have it in this balance, because all of these have to be in balance. Has anybody found a verse in the Bible that says you have to like your kids? Anybody? It's not there. There is not a verse in the Bible that says you have to like your kids. It's not there, because like isn't love. A little sidebar, you know, there's not a verse in the Bible that says you have to like your spouse. Oh, you got a little rise out of that one. Because sometimes we don't do likable things. Sometimes your kids won't do likable things. It's part of their mission is to embarrass you publicly. I really think at times kids have a staff meeting. They get together. Okay, what are we going to do to mom and dad? Or, you know, the ones that can't sleep, listen, I'll take the 10 to 2 shift. You get the 2 to 4, okay? And we'll keep them up all night. That's what it feels like sometimes. Here's what a child does own. They own their emotions. Emotional regulation is one of the first cognitive skills they have to develop. Here's why. A kid goes from emotion to a reaction in a nanosecond. My friend Phil's here. Phil and I are in the water line at school. He's ahead of me. I push him out of the way, get ahead of him. Phil turns around, he pops me one. Who does the teacher see? Phil. Okay. The next day, Phil's ahead of me again. I push him out of the way. He turns around and pops me. Who does the teacher see? Phil. The third day, I shove him. Phil decides, wait a minute. I'm tired of doing detention and missing recess. Probably the best thing is not to hit back. Children learn character through boundaries when they know what happens. They own their emotions because emotions are simply a signal of what they're thinking, but they will go straight to a behavior. Any of your kids under the age of 5 have meltdowns in Target? Oh, I guess so. Okay. Yeah. Well, there's a reason why they have meltdowns. An attitude is how they have it before people, their stances, because feelings lead to actions. Their attitudes. They're responsible for that. And they're responsible for the behaviors. When we insulate a child from the consequences of their own behavior, do they learn anything? No, they don't. They are responsible for that, for their emotions, for their attitudes and behaviors. It is critical that they learn that. It's the first cognitive tool that they learn. Here's some typical feelings. You ever hear this from kids? That's not fair? Mm-hmm. And what do you say? Life's not fair. Oh, thanks, Dad. I never knew that. Thank you. It's going to radically change my life. I'll never say that again in my life. It didn't work for me. It didn't work for you guys, right? Okay, that's an emotion because it's a signal of what they're thinking. And their behaviors are determined from their attitudes, which are determined by their thinkings. Here's a little thing down in the behavior. A little tool. This is free. A public offense gets a public consequence. A private offense gets a private. Now, isn't that just like our law? If I rob a bank, is that kind of a public offense? Am I going to have a public trial and be the front page of the Sun Sentinel? Yeah. Isn't that not life? So you give your children the option. Well, they want to embarrass you in public, or they're doing something in front of one of their other children, you say, well, you got a choice here. If you continue to do this in public, I will give you a public consequence. Now, they're going to test you to make sure you really want to do that. And parents, you got to have the courage to do it. Because if they know you're going to discipline in front of their friends, guess what they probably won't do in front of their friends. One of my Army buddies tells this story. His 15-year-old son, Matt, it's Saturday morning, and he's supposed to mow the yard. Well, he's in the room, in his room, playing video games. So Dan walks by and says, Matt, it's time to go mow the yard. He says, I'm playing video games with my friends, and when I'm done, I'll go mow the yard. Dan goes in to the fuse panel, flicks the breaker, and the lights go off in Matt's room. He comes up, Dad, the lights are off in my room. And Dan says, yeah, I know. I turned them off. Why? Well, son, if I don't go to work and earn a paycheck and I don't pay the electric bill, they'll turn off my power. So until you do the work, the power's off. Right in front of all of Matt's buddies. That's a sweet. One parent says, you can do that? Yeah. It's neither a felony or a misdemeanor. There's not the 11th commandment that says thou shalt turn the breaker panel off in your kid's bedroom. It's not there. And he did it. Guess how many times he had to remind Dan to mow the yard going forward. By the way, Matt now works for his father. And Dan is a member of the USGA. He designs golf courses, and Matt's a wonderful man. I had the pleasure of meeting him. So that's why public offenses have public consequences. It's very important to do that. By the way, emotions. One of the things that Moms in Touch teaches, and I like this, is called simmer time. I have two grandkids, grandsons, not my angel granddaughters, who get a lot of simmer time. And they lose it, they have a meltdown. The parents say, simmer time, and they put them in a cage to simmer down. Why am I here? I got mad at mommy and daddy. I need to simmer down. It works, you don't say anything. Now they're gonna negotiate all the way to the penalty box, okay? They're gonna promise to go on the mission field, tithe everything they get. They're gonna do that. Don't say a word. They need to get the message. That's simmer time. It really works. I know some of you are reluctant to apply the word of education to the seed of knowledge, right? Some of you have some issues with that. That's the alternative. Summertime. Go chill. It works, but don't let them see you cry. Don't flinch your eyes, because as soon as you go like this, they know they gotcha. Little boogers. Straight to simmer time. All right, let's look at some boundary principles. A boundary simply says what you own. For example, when we bought our house and the folks came out and put those little orange flags all around our house, that let me know where my yard stopped and Dick Ziegler's began. Because if I didn't know that, I might mow Dick's yard. Now, would he mind? Probably not. But is that my responsibility? I don't own that. A child owns their emotions, their attitudes, and their behaviors. That's the law of sowing and reaping. Anybody familiar with Galatians 6 and 7? Want to quote it?
No.
Okay. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever a man sows, that will he reap. Now, in modern language, that's if you don't want to do the time, don't do the crime. But sowing and reaping. When I was in high school, I was number 3 in my class. In my junior year, when I got my license, I suddenly became pretty smart. Okay? And my dad and my mom said all I had to do to drive their car was to stay on the Be Honor Roll. Okay, that's all I had to do. Now, I lived 18 miles from Hooterville on a farm, and you're isolated. Well, I managed to get myself grounded half of my junior year because I missed the honor roll. And true to form, halfway through, just to make sure I was perfect, chores, A's, and halfway through, because my dad said, you will stay grounded the entire grading period. Now, my father was the comptroller in the family, and comptrollers always say no. My mom was public relations, because public relations says, we can make it happen. So I'd go to mom, and I was just this angel, hoping she'd get me out of the sentence. Didn't work. Well, I managed to get grounded during junior prom. Not a good thing, but I failed to tell my prom date that I was grounded, because I've been trying to get a date with Paula all year long. And of course, I did my usual stick, straight A's, do the chores, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I go, Mom, it's my only junior prom ever. Look what I've done. Oh, you poor baby. So she goes into the kitchen. She's going to tell Dad, okay? Oh, man, baby, date with Paul. I don't care if Jesus is coming back tomorrow in every single minute. Now I've got a real problem. Because I have to go tell Paula and her brand new prom dress ain't going to happen. By the way, I never date with Paula Raymond after that. So when I went to college, my dad said, son, Mom and I will pay your entire way through college. All you have to do is earn your spending money and clothes. But if you choose to fail out, notice the word he used, if you choose to fail out, you'll pay us back everything we have, and you're on your own. Did I have any trouble believing the man? Freshman year, it's hump day. Y'all know what hump day is in college, right? Guys are coming by. Hey, we got to go down to CAMS. All these hot girls are there. You know, da, da, da. And I'm thinking, I got this major accounting test on Friday. Cute girls, flunk out of school. On my pretty easy call. Because I knew what happened. Okay. Thank God for my father. Thank God. I lost Dad 3 years ago at 95. And his legacy still lives. Not at that time, okay? But it still lives. The law of responsibility is Galatians chapter 6, verse 4. It says, but everyone should carry his own load. That Greek word load has the connotation of a knapsack. What they owe. I'll tell a story about my daughter because she's not here. We're at Disney. She's got half her room in her backpack, okay? You know what that's like. They take everything with them. So we walk through the Main Street station. And I said, now, Jenna, if you take this with you, you'll have to carry it because if you ask Daddy to carry it any time, we're going to come back to the station, put it in the locker, and pick it up on the way back. Oh, Daddy, I won't ask you that. Halfway up Main Street, Daddy, can you carry my bag? Sure. We go right back to the station with my 5-4-year-old daughter, weeping and wailing, promising to go to the mission field, have all her money, you know that. Locked it up. She looked at me like, let's go. And we got on the way out. Mothers, what does this mean on a Sunday night of a school night when your 10-year-old says, oh, no. What does that mean? Homework. Diorama due tomorrow. Whatever. Science project. And some moms don't want little Danny to fail. So they stay up till 2 in the morning and have this three-dimensional whatever it is, smoking, and do it so little Danny doesn't fail. Fast forward. Danny's now 24. He's sitting at his desk. Monday morning. The boss comes to, Dan, is that report ready to read? Oh, boss, I forgot. Oh, my goodness, I can't believe I let it go. The boss says, oh, don't worry, Dan. I'll cover you. It's okay. Is that going to happen? I don't think so. I don't think so. Remember, they're to be employable? Well, that one's employable. That's employable. That's that law, the law of power. Do you ever have your 4 or 5-year-old say, I want to do it myself? You hear that? And sometimes you let them and sometimes you don't because they think they can do everything. Howard Hendricks told this story that they wanted to teach their kids what they could and could not do, and they decided they had a choice to let the kids learn to do the evening dishes because there's like 6 kids in the family, or they could keep the really nice set of china intact. Howard says they're down to the last cup and saucer. Okay. They learned how to do that. That's why that's so powerful. The law of respect is so important. Is that I'm not the only one that matters. And here's the formula for that. Authority plus relationship equals reality. Authority plus relationship equals reality. Because once they leave our little home, are they prince and princess anymore? You know those drill sergeants at boot camp in Fort Leonard didn't know I was Prince Dan? They had no idea I was Prince Dan. I tried to convince them I was Prince Dan. When I got tired of doing push-ups, I realized that's probably not going to happen. Teaching authority plus relationship sets them up for the reality of the real world. Mason Jackson, who I had dinner with, he's the president of Workforce One here, and he lobbies in D.C. a lot on labor issues. He was talking about millennials. Other millennials that aren't in this room. He said, if you can get them to come to work, they need to know constantly how good they're doing. And if you ask them to work extra, it better be on the beach with their iPad on a Saturday to get them to work. I have clients who have millennials, and it is a pain in the neck to try to get them to work. Show up. I was on a plane coming back from Tallahassee, and next to me was, I got to talk to her, and she was a trainer for a national corporation. I said, what was your major? She says, art. How did you get from that to art? Well, she told me the story. She says, you know, the biggest problem we have is not that they're college educated, because they are, it's getting them to come to work. Part of that is they've never learned authority with relationship because they live in non-reality. There's a law of motivation. Oh, I love this. If any of you ask me this question in Q&A, I'm gonna give you my answer now. A mom asked me one time at Coral Ridge, how can I get my kid to do their homework? I tried to look real scholarly, okay, like I'm really thinking it. I said, you could threaten their life. That's not the answer. Motivation comes from within. And my favorite psychologist gave you the key to that when he said, where your treasure is, that's where your heart is. Find your kid's treasure. You get the heart. You find their treasure. Remember I said I lived on a farm? The only way to civilization was in a car. And my dad knew that my treasure was getting off the farm in any way. How do you get my heart? Tied into my behavior. It's my favorite psychologist. It's the key to understanding your child is finding out what their treasure is. My kid doesn't have a treasure. Oh yeah, he's just good at masking it. I love this when a kid says, parent says, well, you're grounded, or I'm gonna take this away. Kid says, I don't care. Take it away. Watch what happens. You're gonna get a screaming meanie. They don't think you're gonna do it. Take it away. You'll get their heart. Oh, my favorite, for you parents of adolescents, not that this ever happened to me, okay? You find out something that your little prince and princess has done, and you go up and say, is it not true that I heard you cut class on Tuesday? As soon as they say, who told you that? Guilty. Because if they didn't do it, they'd say, well, I don't really got that, Dad, because I had this, this, and this. As soon as they say, who told you that? Guilty. Guilty. Because if they weren't, they'd tell you the truth, which is one of the boundaries. The law of evaluation, very important. Here's what that means. That comes from my favorite verse, Hebrews 12:11. Is the difference between hurt and harm. Pain's a gift. I used to run 6 miles a day. I loved running on golf courses. And I started getting this pain in my knees. What did that pain tell me to do and not do? Stop running. You're gonna get knee replacement. It's wonderful. So I moved to the gym and run on a soft treadmill. I still have my original knees. They're all original parts. Your children don't know the difference between hurt and harm. You take your five-year-old to get a vaccination. They see the needle. They scream like crazy. They think they are going to be harmed. Are they? We won't get into the issue about vaccination. That's another story. They're hurt, but not harmed. When I told my mom that this is my only prom I'm ever going to have, I laid it as if I was being harmed for life. I was hurt, but was I harmed? Nope. Big difference. Let's go through these last, and there's a lack of proactivity. When kids say this, here's the distinction about when they say they can't do it, What that really means is they're uncomfortable doing it. The law of proactivity also says tantrums don't last forever. Here's a little key. When a kid has a tantrum, remember this, if there's no audience, there's no show. What do you mean? I had a parent do this a long time ago. We can't do this anymore. The kid at 5 years old, every time they got to the Publix checkout line, would lay on the floor when he couldn't get a Snickers bar and throw a tantrum. So mom went through a time when no one was there, told the front end manager what was going to happen. Kid said, I want a Snickers bar. She said, no, and he lays on the floor, closes his eyes, he's just, arr! Mom goes and hides behind a counter. You can't do that today, you get arrested. He wakes up and looks like this, goes, Mom? 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 Guess what he never did again? I had two parents whose kids were used to throw little zingers one another across the table, you know, run the whole dinner. Mom and Dad does this. They're sitting very quiet. Dad picks up his spoon, the headpiece, and flips a pea at his wife. Don't say anything. She puts a pea back down. The kid's like, stop it. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. Stop it. Stop it. Keep doing it. Keep doing it. And finally says, well, we throw peas at one another. You're throwing negative statements. When you stop, we will. Those are some cool parents. Now, if you go home and use all these things to your kids, and I get my cars keyed because you told them who did it, there's the law of envy. Oh, this is so important. The law of envy, listen closely, says the good is something I don't have. The good is something I don't have. If a child has that, what will they never learn to be content with? What they have. The great Paul says, I've been rich, I've been poor, I've been plenty. I've learned the secret of contentment. It had nothing to do with his circumstances. You know, some of the folks that I met at your church, literally from West Africa, literally came with just the clothes on their back. And they were thrilled because they knew Jesus. They were thrilled. And I complain because the air is not cold enough. The law of envy, folks, says the good is that which I do not have. It also impacts marriages. When you think about, oh, if my wife or husband were only, that starts with children to learn the good is what I do have. There's a law of activity, the law of exposure, and the law of exposure basically is honesty. By the way, if you'd like to read in depth in the Boundaries book, they go through chapter after chapter on these with a lot of case illustrations. What are boundaries on the ground? Boundaries are simply what you're going to do. You're going to do it. You're not responsible for other people's behavior because they don't control other people. Boundaries don't control your kids. Your kids are uncontrollable unless they want to be controllable. I was an uncontrollable adolescent. If I went to the library as many times as I told my parents I went to the library in high school, I would have been a Phi Beta Kappa. Like, I would have. They don't control others. You're not responsible for others' feelings about your boundaries. How do you know a boundary is working? People get mad at you. They get mad at you. That means it's working. I tell my clients, I did this and my kid got mad at me. It's working. Your job as a parent is to set the boundary. Your kid's job is to push back and negotiate against the boundaries. And then your job is to not let the kid renegotiate the boundaries and have you cave in. I will openly confess, I really have a hard time with my four grandkids. I want to cave every time. And I look at my son and daughter-in-law and my son-in-law and daughter, and they give me the evil look. Don't you dare. Don't like being a jerk grandpa, but okay. And they really protect you against boundary haters. Your children basically hate boundaries. When you put them in summertime, it protects you. It protects you. You know, you said your kid in the summertime and you say it's time to come out and they don't want to come out. you think, man, 10 more minutes of freedom. Okay? They learn to do that. How boundaries work. They're the natural flow of an offense. When I didn't make honor roll, what was a natural flow? My dad wasn't the consequence. Not having a car to drive was the consequence. He was outside the consequence. Consequences fit the size of the offense. Did you ever tell your kids, you're grounded until you're married? Now, what does every kid know? It ain't gonna happen. They have to fit the offense. They're fair, immediate, and related to the offense. Because the younger the child is, the more they have to be close to that offense. Because in 2 seconds, they won't remember it. Unless it's right then. They must be given immediately. You want to avoid the emotional consequences like, I can't believe you did it. How many times have I told you? What do I have to do? You're such a disappointment. That scars a child. Sets a precedent for attachment disorders, if you want a psychological term. Because they're not bonded. You lose relational consequences only if the if it concerns your feelings. Here's a good, Dan, I am really sad that you chose to do that. I'm really sad. I was hoping you'd do this. I'm really sad because that's natural. I know we have anthropomorphic expressions of God, of when God says he's sad. Now, God's not sad like we are. He's not angry like we are, but it helps us understand that he grieves. How about we grieve the Holy Spirit? When I sin, I'm sure the Holy Spirit's not crying, oh, I can't believe you did that. But we understand that's an emotional consequence. I'm really sad that you did that. How they work. Consequences protect yourself and the rest of the family. You know, when Danny acts up, summertime, everybody else gets a break. Because usually when it's in front of all the kids, it's really an attention-seeking behavior and trying to disrupt so they can be the focal point, but they're not there. It's a break for everybody. Preserve choice as much as possible. Eliminate any valid reasons for misbehavior. When I talk with families, I always rule, is there anything that could be going on? Is there anything that could be going on? There's four areas that could be affecting the child. School, family, friends, church. That's where you look. There could be something going on. Bullying's very unfortunate epidemic in our culture. Very much epidemic. So is child abuse. And talk to the child and ask about their misbehavior. And rather than lecturing, you ask what they were doing, what they were thinking, what was their understanding. Here's my favorite tool that your kids will absolutely hate. Absolutely hate it. What is your understanding of the consequence if you don't turn your homework in? They'll have a myriad of reasons because you're asking them to own that. And they don't want to do that. But when they give it back, they now know that you know that they know, and they're responsible. When you use rewards, I hope I don't offend, but I'm not a fan of the participant trophy. I'm just not. I'm not. Here's what it leads to. In my Dunkin' Donuts, I go and I said, I'd like an apple bran muffin. They give me the bran muffin. I give them the money. They give me change. And there's this cup that says, tip. For what? Now, if they'd run out in the curb, oh, Dan, here's your, okay. Oh. No wonder we have entitled people. A tip's for extraordinary effort above and beyond what they're getting paid for. But you teach your kids not to do this. When a child performs exceptionally above and beyond, I consult with some businesses and we talk about bonuses. I said, for what? Do you not pay them for four? Yes. Did they double your sales this year? No. Then why did they get a bonus? I am definitely old school, okay? Old school. But that's biblical. The laborer is worthy of his hire, says Scripture. If you don't work, you don't eat. It's just biblical. Not for age-appropriate requirements for civilized people. Do you pay your kid $10 because they take the trash out on Sunday and Thursday? Or is that what a member of the family does? It's part of the family, it's bonding. And you, not for doing what is expected. Now, some of you are going to say, do you pay for grades? And we'll talk about that, it's a Q&A. But you teach them, they do what's expected. Otherwise, they go to work and expect to get raises for sitting in their chair playing on their iPad when the boss isn't looking. Talked to an attorney at the gym one day. He was opposing counsel, was a millennial lawyer who was on their iPhone and missed 9 clear-cut motions that should have been objected to. 9. He was opposing counsel. He's looking. He's supposed to do something. And he's going to charge that guy $500 an hour. You've probably seen stuff like that, too.